You probably have heard of Boeing's swept-winged aircraft. The swept wing has been one of the biggest factors in the company's historical success. Swept wings sweep back at an angle rather than jut out perpendicular to the airplane body. And this innovation has allowed the jets to travel much, much faster. Today, every Boeing jet has that basic swept wing design. Journalist Russ Banham's written about how Boeing got the design in his history of the airplane maker. It's called Higher, 100 Years of Boeing. Banham told Ross Reynolds that company founder Bill Boeing got involved in the airplane business back in the early part of the 20th century at the dawn of human flight.
He went to Yale's Sheffield Engineering School, and he had a bent for all things mechanical. An early biographer once wrote, so he was an inveterate tinkerer. He moved out to the Pacific Northwest to chase his fortunes, got into the timber business, did really well trading timberlands. Of course, that was the industry in the Pacific Northwest at the time. And then he entered the boat building business and owned a boat shed down on Lake Union. There were, at that time, you know, you'd have these traveling exhibitions of where aviators would take people up for, you know, a nickel, a dime. And he really wanted to get up in one of these airplanes. I mean, who wouldn't at that time? Out on Lake Union was this aviator, Terry Mahoney, in one of these exhibitions. And he finally got the opportunity to fly. And when the plane landed, he turned to his best friend, Conrad Westervelt, with whom he would launch his company, the original company, B&W. And he said, "We can do better than that."
Which is kind of amazing because he'd never built a plane before, right?
No, he did not.
Russ Banham's history of Boeing is Higher, 100 Years of Boeing. At that early moment when he knew he could make a better plane, was he already thinking of what Boeing might become? Was he already thinking of passenger travel and all the ways that aircraft evolved?
You know, I think because he was a businessman at heart, that he was imagining a bright future for aviation. You know, it's so funny. I just read David McCullough's book, The Wright Brothers, which is a great book. There's a plug. In it, he quotes this Johns Hopkins professor of astronomy, Simon Newcomb, 1901, 2 years before Kitty Hawk. And he writes, even if we, you know, remember all the trial and error, no one believed, there were so many naysayers, that this could even be achieved flying. And he wrote, you know, even if we were to invent an airplane, you know, what utility would it serve? And he wrote, it would be made by a watchmaker to transport insects.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. And then, you know, here we are, and it's 1915, and Bill Boeing's building airplanes.
It wasn't a going concern at first, though. He was actually subsidizing it out of his other businesses.
That's correct, yeah. You know, World War I came around, and there were, you know, obviously it lifted the company's financial fortunes. But when the war ended, so did business. And he had all these workers at this boathouse. So he put them to other enterprises, like building what were called sea sleds. These were a type of boat. It's funny because history will repeat during the 1970s. Yeah, you and I are of an age, so we remember the oil crisis and the long lines at gas stations. And that's the famous billboard that you and I had chatted about earlier, you know, with the last one leaving Seattle, turn out the lights. Boeing's employment, you know, plummeted from over 100,000 to, I guess, about 37,000, I think, at that time. And, you know, Time magazine was predicting its bankruptcy. No one thought it would come back. And what did Boeing do? It diversified again. It made some hydrofoil boats. It made rail cars. And again, it survived. So.
And Boeing, it certainly wasn't the only major U.S. airline manufacturer.
No.
There was Hughes Airline. There was McDonnell Douglas. There was Northrop. There was Lockheed. How did Boeing sort of become the preeminent one and absorb some of those other companies?
Well, I'm going to give you a sort of a macroeconomic answer. So, you know, after World War II, if you were to ask anyone, you know, who would be around 50 years from now, most everyone would have said Douglas, you know, because, of, you know, Don Douglas was a brilliant entrepreneur. The DC series of jets was the preeminent form of commercial passenger transport. But something remarkable happened in the waning days of World War II. The Germany was losing. Hitler had ordered that all research facilities be destroyed. And General Hap Arnold at the time wanted to get to these research facilities, particularly the aeronautical ones, before they were destroyed. And he put together a team of American aviation engineers. And on that team was George Scherer, a high-ranking Boeing executive. And they went to Germany, and they found this secret German aeronautical research institute in Volkenrode, which is just east of Hanover. And it had not been destroyed. It had turned out that the superintendent of the building was fond of it, and he didn't want to destroy it. It was such a beautiful structure. It had a wind tunnel and all. And he gave him a tour of the facility. And in a well outside were all the papers, all the research papers were tossed in there. And when they were brought up, there were drawings for the first swept-back wing jet. Now, jets, there had only been one jet invented by the Germans, the Messerschmitt, but it was, you know, your traditional T-shaped. This had them with the wings going back. And George Scherer, among all those on that aviation team, was the first to realize the import. And he wrote dashed off the 7-page letter with drawings of what he saw there, put it in an envelope, marked it censored, sent it off to Seattle, and said, stop everything. We were going to build a jet. Stop production right now. Stop design. This is what we're going to do.
That's amazing. Nazi papers in a hole.
In a well.
Gave them the idea.
That's exactly right. And from that, the experimental B-47, which became the 707, which was, and that seven series of jets, to finish the story, is what would decimate the DC series of jets that McDonnell Douglas and Don Douglas had produced.
I'm speaking with Russ Banham. His new history of Boeing is called Higher, 100 Years of Boeing. Now, there are not that many companies mm-hmm. that have lasted as long and remained as strong as Boeing yeah. has. I mean, to yeah. what do you attribute its longevity and preeminence in its area?
I think it's a combination of great leadership at times of duress. I also think it's the Boeing workforce. It's a can-do resolve. You know, that I think it harks back to Bill Boeing himself, who wrote, and I end my book with his quote because it's such a powerful quote, is to not give in to the naysayers, you know, that it can never be done. And I think it's that kind of spirit of constantly pushing the envelope of what is technologically feasible. Impenetrable barriers. I think that's what has guided this company right since the beginning. You know, people talk about corporate culture. Well, the culture begins with the founder. Because you think about it, you know, he or she hires people of like mind and spirit and passion. And then those people do the same and they hire people of that same fabric. And then over time, we call it the company's culture. So I don't think it's a stretch for me to go way back in time to those comments by Bill Boeing and say that they actually embody this, you know, massive global organization of today.
There used to be a phrase that if Boeing sneezed, the region caught a cold because we were so dependent on the Boeing economy. That's changed. We've got Microsoft. We've got Amazon. It's still a giant part of the economy, but it's not the part of the economy. And also, we've seen Boeing's corporate headquarters leave for Chicago. We've seen Boeing opening up plants in South Carolina. So a lot of people around here are kind of wondering, is Boeing committed to the Northwest? What's your sense?
Well, my goodness, it employs I think 85,000 people in the Puget Sound area today. Back in the 1960s and 70s, during that crisis, it was down to 37,000. So that's a significant number of jobs. And throughout the rest of the country, you know, tack on another 150,000 jobs. I mean, this is a company that's extremely important to the economy of the United States. That's a lot of salaries that this organization is paying. And then you add to that the fact that Boeing is the country's largest exporter. I mean, you know, when talk about foundational strength of the U.S. economy, Boeing is indeed one of those pillars. Right now, the 787 is selling like gangbusters. The future looks really bright for it. The 777X is in the works. Future looks really bright for that. You know, it's got those stalwart competitors of Airbus on the commercial passenger side, and indeed, you know, Lockheed Martin on the defense side. All good companies. You know, I think the only place for them to go is up.
Journalist Russ Banham. His history of the Boeing Company is called Higher, 100 Years of Boeing. Banham spoke to Ross Reynolds.